Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the last day of campaigning before Tuesday's Iowa caucuses and speak with Max Shelley, a professor of political science and statistics at Iowa State University. We will discuss the apparent tie between frontrunners Ron Paul, Rick Santorum, and Mitt Romney, and get a local perspective on the media bombardment of Iowans and a broader national perspective on a growing sense of alienation and disgust with our broken democracy at the same time that unprecedented media attention is focused on the rituals of our democratic electoral process. Then, with President Obama's recent signing of a controversial bill imposing sanctions against Iran's central bank, and Iran's retaliation with missile tests and naval exercises in the Gulf, along with the recent threat by Iran's vice president to shut the Straits of Hormuz, we will look into whether the U.S. and Iran are on a collision course. A specialist on Iran, Mazia Behrouz, joins us to assess how much both sides are on a trajectory towards war, having trapped themselves into an escalation of rhetoric and actions, where any spark could set off a conflagration in a volatile region that supplies 20% of the world's oil. Then finally, the Washington editor-at-large for The Atlantic and editor-in-chief of Atlantic Live, Steve Clemens, joins us to discuss the growing importance of the vice president's role in foreign affairs, with Joe Biden about to take charge of U.S.-China relations that the White House recently announced as its new priority in the coming years. We will discuss how someone who has been gaining more power and influence quietly, working behind the scenes in a number of critical foreign policy areas, could be the subject of rumors that suggest he will be jettisoned from the 2012 ticket for Hillary Clinton to run as vice president. Joining us now is Max Shelley, a professor of political science and statistics at Iowa State University. His research and teaching focuses on American politics and public policy. He is co-author of a major textbook, American Government and Politics, which is being used widely in introductory classes on American government. Welcome to Background Briefing, Max Shelley.
Wonderful to join you.
And you are literally at ground zero now for I think it's an unprecedented media blitz, isn't it? You cannot turn on the television without somebody trashing somebody else, right?
That's right. Yeah, the fur is flying very definitely among the candidates, and we're under pretty heavy bombardment. It's going to continue probably right up until the very start of caucuses, about 7 p.m. Iowa time tomorrow night.
So there is no rule against campaigning on Election Day?
No, there isn't. And actually, depending upon where candidates are able to show up themselves, they could actually do a little bit of last-minute stumping even at the caucus sites.
So what do you make of this apparent draw, if you will? They're all three leading candidates seem to be polling equally. Is that, you think it's likely to be the outcome? Everybody getting about 22%?
Probably going to be typified as a Pyrrhic victory for whoever knows out the other two major contenders. It's absolutely guaranteed no one's going to come away with anything close to a clear majority. Probably the best anyone will do is in the low to mid 30% range. So usually the top three, maybe the top four finishers are able to claim some degree of victory, punch their ticket out of Iowa, so to speak, and live to fight another day in New Hampshire or a little bit farther down the road, South Carolina or Florida. But basically half probably of the seven folks who are officially contending are going to be out of the running by the time the votes are tabulated or shortly after the Spinmeisters have their say.
But this has culminated an enormous amount of spending, right? And the one person who avoided Iowa or dismissed it and now has shown up with a vengeance, Mitt Romney, and he's supposedly picking up numbers, but so also is Santorum. So just to deal with Santorum, does that mean that the critical evangelical vote is coalescing around one person as opposed to splitting it between Santorum, Bachman, and Perry?
Well, I think the evangelical vote is starting to coalesce for sure. Yeah, that certainly helps explain Santorum's rise. Another element is that Santorum is about the last major candidate to be able to rise. You know, all the others have pretty well had their day in the sun. They crashed and burned, and Santorum is more or less the last one left to be elevated at this last stage. And he may like out in the sense that not having peaked earlier, he may not have enough time to be sufficiently trashed by the other candidates. He's probably going to benefit from that late coming to the front ranks.
But I understand that in 2008, when Huckabee won, the evangelical vote was about 60% of the Republican caucus votes. What would you put it at today?
Well, 60% is about right. That's based on an entrance poll for the January 3, 2008 caucuses. We don't have precise numbers, obviously, yet, but the pre-election polls, especially done by the Des Moines Register, the major statewide paper, is suggesting that the evangelical portion is probably down to maybe only a third of all YP participants. Well, we'll have to wait and see, obviously. In a little bit over 24 hours, we'll have a pretty good gauge of that. But it apparently one of the things that's been going on that's helped to drive this perpetual rise and fall of the more socially conservative candidates, particularly, is that a lot of the folks who would have turned out as evangelical representatives 4 years ago just haven't been in the game until very recently. It's also worth noting that even the most recent statewide poll is still showing about 40% of respondents indicating that they might change their minds. So there's still plenty of volatility here.
And what explains that sort of explains Santorum's rise, or the fact that he's a factor now. What explains Ron Paul's? Now, he has a lot of support from libertarians and to some extent from anti-war Democrats. They can't vote, though, can they?
Well, actually, they can. It's important to realize that you do have to profess by signing up to become one, profess being a Republican at the time of the caucus. It's a trivial process. You sign a sheet of paper, you become a Republican, perhaps just overnight, and the next day you can go back and change your registration back to what it was before. So it's not quite an open primary, but it has some interesting implications that are kind of similar to crossover voting. It's worth keeping in mind, too, sort of an obvious fact, that there is no real contest on the Democratic side. Probably that'll mean substantially lower turnout among the Democrats, too. And Democrats who want to be in the game themselves tomorrow night might just stop by in Republican caucuses and maybe have some fun. There is also probably going to be a much heavier participation by political independents in this process. Political independents, by definition, don't belong to either of the two major parties, so they're open to try out pretty much any new game in town. And I think there might be sufficient interest on their part that many of them will show up. Now, that latter fact in particular, and the anti-war Democrats who might show up at the Republican caucuses, might help Ron Paul possibly finish a close second. I guess he could barely eke out a majority, well, it'd be a plurality, over any other candidate, assuming that crossover turnout's fairly high.
So it's not an open primary, but it's just that easy to infiltrate, and there. And so, given how easy it is, has there been evidence in the past of Democrats and other people with other political affiliations crashing the Republican caucuses?
That's happened somewhat. One of the twists, of course, this year is the Occupy movement. They've been very active, and well, several dozen have been arrested demonstrating, by the way, both at the Obama headquarters and various Republican headquarters. They're definitely not playing favorites. They're protesting pretty much everybody in the establishment. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually on a listserv where I'm tracking this kind of thing.
Now, that's at the Renaissance Hotel, right? They occupied the 12 were arrested today, with 50 lying on the floor of the Renaissance Hotel in the lobby in Des Moines, decrying the influence of corporate money in politics and Obama's signing of the National Defense Authorization Act.
Yeah, they seem to have plenty to decry from all sides politically. So there is a boomlet, at least. It's not going to be a large number of people, but there's some effort among the Occupy wing of the political spectrum to show up at, I guess it could be either the Democratic or Republican caucus, more likely the Republican, though, and vote for uncommitted. There was an earlier discussion, by the way, about whether the Republicans would even count uncommitted votes, and I think they decided that they are going to do so.
So that's the sort of none-of-the-above type of protest vote?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much. It's not likely to wind up being a significant percentage, but it's a way to vent frustration. And mm-hmm. when you feel like pretty much the whole political establishment is on the wrong side of where you are, it's one of the few things you can do that's at least a peaceful way to express satisfaction.
Well, in that vein, Max Shelley, again, professor of political science and statistics at Iowa State University and author of the major textbook American Government and Politics, I find it somewhat paradoxical that this is a year where I think there's unprecedented alienation from the political system and frankly, disgust with the gridlock and the games in Washington, D.C., and more people are registering as independents. The Democratic and Republican registration is way down. And yet at the same time, the media seems to be sort of celebrating and almost obsessing over political process, not results or content, but process. So does that paradox occur to you?
Oh, yeah, it certainly is a paradox. It's something that's been kind of perpetual in American political history. So it's not exactly a new thing on the agenda. To pick up on one point you just made regarding the rise of the political independence, I just Googled this up so to be sure about the data. Nationally, among all adults, something like 41% identify themselves as in surveys as independents. Republicans are down to 25%, by the way, and Democrats about 30%. So if there ever were an opening for a third major political party, this sure seems like a propitious time. Now, whether that's going to grow out of the current angst and alienation so many people feel, hard to say, because that sense of disconnectedness from the political structure isn't really a matter of ideology so much. It's not that the conservatives are bent out of shape or the liberals are feeling alienated. It's pretty much all of the above, feeling that they don't really have much of a role. And to go back to your earlier point about the current media blitz, some of this is, definitely not helped at all by things like the recent Supreme Court ruling on Citizens United, which basically made it very easy for these super PACs to form, to throw millions of dollars darn near at the drop of a hat, it's almost instantaneous now, to wage advertising campaigns against whomever the target of the day is. That's one of the things that's very, very new and different right now. And I guess depending a lot on your perspective, you could regard that as something of a real serious threat to the survival of the Democratic polity if people with deep pockets can have that much influence that quickly. That's almost certainly one of the reasons why you've had this extreme volatility, really fast surge and often equally fast decline or almost destruction of some of the candidates on the Republican side. Mm.
Well, it's just that as the more people are alienated from our democracy, the more the media appears to be celebrating it. And that's the paradox that I found puzzling.
Yeah. Well, indeed, yeah. The media like a good fight, and they like a show. The horse race aspects of this are really fascinating. I'm sure we've all seen the up-and-down graphs of support for the different candidates. And that's the kind of thing that's, I suppose, it's literally fun to report on. It doesn't get to the heart of the matter, however, about the angst and other difficulties. Mm-hmm. If you want other numbers to throw into this picture, the latest Gallup poll showed that Congress has an 11%, just barely in double digits, favorability rating.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd heard that it was 9. So
lower than that, even if you try very hard.
Well, you have to ask yourself, who are those 11%?
Yeah, you think maybe just not paying attention or something.
Right.
By the way, that popularity for Congress is down to just 7% among independents.
Right.
It's about 12 or 14% for Democrats and Republicans, respectively. So basically, nobody likes Congress. The presidency is in a little bit better shape, but even there, Obama is just sort of barely sort of has even percentages for and against. So he personally and the presidency in general aren't doing terribly much better.
But nevertheless, we will spend most of this year going through these rituals, surely, as we move to New Hampshire, then South Carolina and Florida, etc. And meanwhile, billions will be spent. There is a sort of disconnect here, it seems, between...
Well, there is, and then a lot of people are going to make money off of this, for sure. The Obama campaign reputedly is going to try to raise, and I presume spend, about $1 billion. That's pretty staggering.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're watching the dress rehearsal now.
Romney's
super PAC has pounded Gingrich into submission, right? Now he says he's going to take off his gloves and fight back, but I guess he too little too late.
It's a bit late, yeah.
Right. Well, I thank you for joining us.
I'm sorry.
Just any last thoughts, because we're just going to move on. But you just told us that this could go on till the campaigning could go on till 7 p.m. tomorrow, and I take it there'll be quick results after that, though, won't there?
Yeah, pretty fast. I would say by 9 p.m. Central Time, you should have at least early returns. Our local news broadcasts at 10 p.m. local time are certainly going to have pretty much complete results.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Max Shelley.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, I've been talking with Max Shelley, professor of political science and statistics at Iowa State University. He's the author of a major textbook, American Government and Politics, which has been used widely in introductory classes on American government. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the U.S. and Iran on a collision course towards war.